Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, okay, I think we're ready.
Beautiful.
There it goes. Hey, everybody, and this is Frank at Iron Age Sports. Is it beautiful Saturday? Watching a half-nude man out on his dock for no reason in South Florida. We have an extra special guest today. He has not fought anybody recently, but you give him some time and a couple drinks, you never know. Professional drummer, multi-instrumentalist, and metal as F, Rustin Gross. Rustin, thank you for being on.
Thank you, Frank. It's awesome to do this. I've been watching this a bunch. You're doing some really good stuff, putting out some awesome content. I like the one about water a lot, specifically. You got to stay hydrated.
Hydration is important. If you'd like to, for all the people who do not know you, you want to give us a little bio of yourself?
Sure. So I've been, playing music for God knows how long at this point. I'm the current drummer for the band, the seminal death metal act Master, as well as Death Strike, which is pretty much the same band, But we get away with, having them as two. I got my own thing going on, which is Mesa Spentust, which is more like progressive kind of death metal. It's all metal. I play jazz. I play a bunch of different stuff. I have a million other bands that I used to be in, but I don't even need to go into that. But yeah, fun stuff. Tour all over the place and make music.
The unfortunate thing is the one you didn't mention was your incredible abilities as a country music bass player.
Oh, no.
I did get the chance to witness.
Yeah, country music.
I guess that was just, I needed a paycheck, and here it was.
Yeah, it was fun, though. I like doing shit like that because it kind of pushes me out, I mean, same thing with teaching. Like, when I, first came down to Florida, I was teaching a lot, and it really pushed me out of my, comfort zone. It made me, because I had, 11-year-olds shredding circles around me. I'm like, oh, no. So I got to up my game here. So, I learned a lot that way. So just doing different stuff kind of makes you better.
You're still available for class. You're still available to teach, right?
Yeah, I do. I still do once in a while. I have a guy, my buddy up in Virginia, who's just awesome. I had, did a lesson with him, drums. I've got a friend of mine here. I did a guitar lesson. So, I do private lessons here and there.
That's good. Well, that's good to know. Some people may want to take a lesson from a more well-rounded player. Such as yourself.
I'm getting more well-rounded with this whole virus, that's for sure. Very well-rounded at this point.
You got to do what you have to do. So if you get it, we'll do a couple of different things as we go along. I had a question here, especially because people may not understand. There's drumming, and then there's drumming, and then there's blast beating and things like that.
Yeah.
You want to explain a little bit about the type of drumming that you're doing now for these groups, for your personal project versus the Master Death Strike, and then versus what the regular guys are doing as far as banging the old 4/4.
Totally. Well, okay. So I guess I'll start with, what I do in Master. So Master is like old school, straight up caveman, on fire drumming. So it's not like, I wouldn't say it's like the most extreme speed, but it's definitely like, it's fast, and there's a lot, it requires a lot of force. So not only, so some like really, really extreme, super fast death metal and things like that, you're going at 250 and above beats per minute. And that's a whole different set of muscles. So, I'm like just using my fingers to do that. And it's like, you're going really, really fast. But whereas with Master, I'm like putting my everything into it. And I'm like, I play, when I play double bass in that band, I'm using my whole leg. So I'm like running in place. And it's a lot of endurance for sure. It's a lot of just going all out pretty much the whole time. And actually in the band that like band, I mean, Suspentus, when I would play the drums, like, cause I play everything in that band at the same time. But when I'm doing drums for that, I'd still use a lot of the same kind of muscles that I'm using for Master because it's not super fast, but I'm also doing more intricate stuff like ghost notes and, cause it's more whatever jazzy or whatever you want to call it. It's definitely a lot more. It's more progressive. So I'm running in place, but then I'm also doing more like pulled back technique. So it's kind of, it's weird to float in between that, but that's become like a big thing in modern metal now.
So that, sure. That comes down to something we had talked about in the past and very recently, which is muscle memory and visualization.
Yeah, for sure.
As a, we'll do as a master drummer, you're basically running a sprint for 45 minutes or however long the set is.
Yeah, like an hour.
And then when you're doing the Mazes Ventus or any of these other type of prog groups, now you have 4, 5, 6 different things going at once.
Yeah.
Are you more of a visualizer? Are you still watching while you're playing? You're just sitting there doing Living After Midnight, you can watch the ceiling and everything else.
Well, I mean, it's funny you say that because, and Pat, my guitarist, always pointed this out to me because we've been in bands together since we were like, you know, teenagers. And whenever I play and it's, you know, obviously something we rehearsed over and over and over and I get into it, like my head just goes back and my eyes just go like, bleh. So at that point, it's, you know, when I'm actually playing it, say on stage or whatever, I'm just like I just kind of disappear a lot of times when I'm thinking about other songs while I'm playing and it's like, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I got to come back. But generally speaking, I think, you know, when I'm trying to learn something or I'm trying to work something out or when I'm trying to build the muscle memory or ingrain this thing in my head, I'm definitely visual. Like I visualize a lot and it's always, especially in the drums, it's always in shapes, like really abstract. I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of ethereal. But
well, do you take it like some people will do where if you have a drum set tuned a certain way, I'll throw them in early, the Black Page.
Yeah.
When people are learning that, they have to tune their set a certain way and then it has to be played in a certain manner. Do you find that would be something, if you took it off of a musical page, seeing it as notes, thinking about it and translating it, or do you hear it and then translate it? Some people have perfect pitch. I know my friend's son is a young big guitar player. He has perfect pitch. He can pick a song up in like 2 passes.
Wow. I know on drums that's a lot easier for me to do. You know, and it depends on the music. It depends on a lot of different things. But I don't know. With drums, it's definitely more listening to it for sure. But then it kind of goes through a filter where when I'm listening to it, I'm relating that into these motions or like what I just say, shapes. And it's literally, okay, if I'm doing like a drum fill, I have to, you know, think about where my hands are going to be before they're there. You know, say I'm trying to do something, some specific type of drum fill, I'll, you know, slow it down and work it out like to a consistent tempo is always and going back to muscle memory. That's the most important thing is like anything you're trying to learn, whether it's on guitar, bass drum, whatever, you know, you're trying to work something out. So you heard it. And then to me, I can visualize it that way rather than having to write it out, but you can write it out and that's helpful too. But you know, sometimes you're interchangeable writing something out or visualizing it. You slow it down to the tempo that you can play it without making a mistake, which there are no mistakes in music. The only mistakes you can make are if you deviate from what your intentions are, you know, what you're intending to play. So you slow it down, put it to a consistent, you know, tempo using a metronome is the best way to do. And then you basically play it as fast as you can without making a mistake. And then once you like really feel comfortable and solid and nail that, you bump it up a few beats per minute using the metronome again. So you know, say it's at 180, you bump it up to 190, and then you do it again until you're super comfortable with that. And that's a good way to, it's programming. It's all, and that's what I think, especially with drums, even how they're written out, it's very logical. Like, you know, in sheet music, it's very logical. It's like the top line's this cymbal, then you got this, then you got the snare, and then you got the bass drum. And it's like, it's linear, it lines up. So it's, you're literally just programming your brain to, you know, to do this thing. And with drums, there's, you know, unless you're Terry Bozzio or whatever, you're not necessarily tuning it to specific notes to play some like weird, you know, marimba friggin' thing, you know.
I had to throw Frank in early, you know that.
Yeah.
There's only so many Terry stories we can tell on here.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll stick with a publishable one. It won't violate the terms of service of
No Mud Shark. Music.
But that was because I've seen so many video, just to get over why I brought it up, other than Frank, was there are so many videos on how to learn that particular song.
Yeah.
I think I saw at least, it's like 75, 80 some videos of guys just how to do it, how to break it down, how to perform it. And I don't think people realize, and the reason I brought you on, other than I got a lot of respect for the music and this and that and the other thing, is years ago, if anybody remembers, oh God, now I'm going to forget his name. Jesus. Gene Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Dancer, right? Mm-hmm. Kelly always had a stigma because he was forced to learn how to dance by his mother. His mother owned a dance company. So him and his brother had to dance because they had to work at the dance school. So they were from Pittsburgh, and it was like a hardcore neighborhood. And the Dancing Kellys was not the most masculine thing to be. So I think they did a lot of fighting too. But Gene's thing was, he was a very physical dancer. Not like nonsense now. I mean, he looked like he was going to get into a fight while he was dancing.
Mm-hmm.
But he did a movie comparing, contrasting athletic movements with dance movements. Huh. And that's why when I started to do this, I said, Kelly was right, because so much of it, it's like sport. It was really training you for life in general. Not maybe the rule, you know, not the rules, but the athleticism.
Yeah.
Same with what you're doing. I mean, I've seen you, I've seen other people. I'm not giving any other shout outs to South Florida drummers, but the amount of physicality and mental aptitude that's necessary to play at a certain level is just, it's, and I play guitar a little, though I know, right? But just the whole fact of the double kick, if you're double kicking away, now you're going to play all the, you know, 15, 20 other things with your other 250 beats.
Right.
So still remember where you are in a song is a long way from Home Sweet Home or stuff like that, where you obviously can play it when you're on heroin.
Yeah.
You know, and still get through the song and nobody knows.
Yep.
So that was the purpose behind initially going with that. But since we're understanding, I guess people understand where you're coming from now with that. When you're going to prepare yourself, do you have a warm-up? Just let's say studio work. Do you have a warm-up going in?
Or absolutely.
Up in practice?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like you're saying, because it is such, it's a physically demanding thing. You have to build yourself up to, I mean, and I'm no athlete, you know, by any means, but you know, you have to build yourself. I'm trying. You know, you got to build yourself up to, I mean, and maintain, like, with a warm up to a point where, you know, because the whole goal of say technique or this or that, or, you know, any of the, even just warming up to be able to do anything, is the whole goal of it is to create, right? So you have to, and especially with this type of music, extreme metal, you know, in particular, you have to like condition yourself to be able to do things that you want to do. So, you know, say if I have to like, you know, run in place for an hour and a half or whatever, you know, I got to get myself to that point. But why am I running in place? So that I can play something, you know what I mean? It's music. And even in terms of how I think about, you know, say if I'm writing a drum part or even adding my own kind of flavor to a drum part, I think of it in, you know, like in terms of, okay, like this cymbal kind of goes along with this vocal part and I'll throw that in there. And then, you know, the toms are kind of going along with the bass here or the guitar, and then the bass drums and metal a lot goes along with the guitar. So I kind of think of it as like a more holistic approach where I'm layering a lot of things. And what I do specifically in master a lot is like Paul will do these like insane screams and I'm always like adding cymbals to accent that. But going back, you know, to your actual question, I have like a warm-up routine. It takes me I usually start doing it a little before, like when the band before us starts setting up. So about, I don't know, an hour or so, and it's a whole stretch routine. You know, it's a death metal yoga, I call it. You know, I have my own thing that I do. And I really like take my time in stretching. Even if I've stretched earlier in the day, I take my time and I breathe. It's a lot of breathing and, you know, staying fucking hydrated. That is the most important. Even if I don't have time to warm up or do shit, I got to drink water. And then after that, you know, I do my stick and feet warm up thing.
My fear with, you know, not my fear. It is my fear. Concern with something like you would be maybe like a tendonitis issue or a carpal tunnel syndrome issue. And that, and sure. I'm sure you guys are trying to avoid that at all times. Mm-hmm. Now that they know that there are things exist.
Yeah. I mean, I had some problems with that actually in the last US tour we were doing, you know, and I mean, it got to a point sometimes where I'm like, oh my God, am I going to throw this stick across the room by accident? Like I can't grip it. And I had a lot of issues with my arms, like all through the forearm. And when we were done playing, I'd literally like, we were actually lucky enough that the company Liquid Death, the awesome, you know, Austrian Alpine water, they had sent us a bunch of cases of water for the tour, which was awesome. Thank you. Shout out to Liquid Death.
Did you say Liquid Death?
That's right. Liquid Death. The only water for me. No.
Well, it is now.
Right now. But so we had this big cooler in there and it was always stocked with ice. You know, shout out to my man Wilbur Wolf because he was, you know, on point with helping us out with that. But so literally I would just.
Best backstage man ever, right?
Yeah, he rules, dude. Will's the man. But I would literally just dunk my arms in, you know, the ice water for like 10 minutes or as long as I could stand it. But it got to the point, it was, you know, pretty painful. But I switched up a couple things. I changed the sticks I was using and it just went away. So I'm like, I don't know what it was, but I've had that problem several, you know, since, I mean, I've had it when I was a kid too, like being 16 years old playing the drums, I had issues sometimes with my arms. So.
Yeah, that was before we started recording, I was talking to Rust and I got his name wrong, but it was Max Weinberg of the Bruce Springsteen band or whatever, E Street band, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Who is also a Delray. We'll out him. I think he lives in Delray or at least he works out in Delray.
Yeah.
He had, if anybody is interested, he had put a video out. I don't think it was a pay video, but like a Drum World exclusive back in the video days, and it was a workout that he did because he has to play 4 or 5 hours with Bruce, whereas Bruce can just run around like an idiot on stage and not have to play very much. But it's true, you know, that's how it is. But that was
the first too, time, man. He's pounding the fucking drums. If you ever watch him, it's crazy.
That's that kind of music, you know. That's I mean, you had it. That's a long, you know. Those were long sets too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like 45 minutes and we go smoke out in the parking lot, and then 45 minutes and we go do our taxes and come back. It's not like a jazz set.
Yeah, exactly.
Last reminisce when I won't mention her name either because we don't see each other anymore. But I was dating a girl who was a vocalist, jazz vocal major from Temple University. And Ortlieb's Jazz House at the time was the spot for Temple jazz people to come in and sit in for
lunch. Yeah.
And at one point they had a drummer and he would go on break and like, where is it? Well, he had gone and shot up in the car and passed out. So he was very jazz, you know, like he wasn't getting fired for that because that was so, you know, that was so jazz music to be nodding out in the car. They had to bring him in. But that was like
terrible.
That's when I used to say, well, that's a jazz break. It's like they play for 10 minutes and they're gone for 4 hours and then they come back.
Wow.
Because everybody's a grasshopper, you know, hanging out in the bar. So they don't know. Time travel does work. But that's right, you know. That's what I used to, when I had the chance to go down, as you know, to Churchill's down in Miami. Mm-hmm. 500 bands for $5 for death metal.
Exactly.
That was what it was. It was a sprint. You guys are out there. You got like, 30-minute sets. I think they were 30-minute sets, something like that.
I forget.
A lot of those guys, the real openers, a super opener.
Right. Yeah. Because that was my show. I put that together. I think I gave him like 45 minutes. I try not to have 45 bands, but yeah.
I mean, this is like a couple years ago. We went down.
That was different for sure. Yeah,
that was definitely every possible band in the tri-state area was it.
Yeah, like that was maybe 20-minute sets.
That was pre-Cult of Azazel.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
it was also an incredible show. And I didn't have any. I have had no business dealings with them. I would say that, but they are living rock and roll backstage there, man.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime you've ever seen a guy throw an amplifier at another guy and drink 20 times the price that they were paid.
Hell yeah.
If they ever put a record out again, I'd buy it just to support that whole freaking nightmare. Yeah.
Well, dude, you know, playing in that band, like, totally, I mean, I learned a whole new style of playing. And actually, you know, our buddy Derek there helped me, you know, like, figure out how to do the double strokes. And then, you know, which was so much easier than I realized. I was like, oh, that's it? He's like, yeah, man. So I wound up using that technique in, you know, Cult of Azazel. And I was able to get up to, like, 260, 300 beats per minute. And play, you know, these long-ass seven-minute songs where I'm blasting and, like, just typewriter feet for that long and not die, you know?
We obviously didn't get a chance to talk shop with the boys. Very little shop talk that night.
Yeah.
But I always wonder with that kind of music, if they're using a drum machine when they're really putting that together, because that would just be punishing.
Yeah.
For your drummer while you're working on songs.
I'm not sure if it was programmed or they played. I don't really know.
I mean, in general, that kind of that style of music.
Right.
That's just a lot for your rehearsal nights or your writing nights.
For sure.
You'd be out there 3 hours of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're worried about putting your arm in ice. You'd be putting your arm in ice after that one, I'm sure.
Well, you know, but with that, it's a totally different set of muscles. I would have to do a lot more, like, I mean, less on the stretching, which I would just still do the same amount of stretching anyway, but more on the actually, like, warming up and getting you know, the speed going. And I mean, because it's all, like, fast twitch or whatever you want to call it, muscles. It's a totally different muscle group. And I would actually, once I kind of locked into that, I'd be able to do that for longer because I'm, like, my whole body is relaxed, you know, except for, like, the very tips of my hands.
Well, can you take a second and explain that to people? Because it when you hear it, it sounds like you should be going like this.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's like you're really going like, I'm doing it down here where nobody can see. You're really going like this. Explain that, because that shows you the amount of force you're able to, and dexterity you're able to generate just with your fingers.
It's true, yeah.
Now they won't buy your video, but explain how it would be done anyway.
I should have a fucking video. But yeah, basically, it's taking, you know, you're trying to retain as much power as you want, because obviously you don't want to hit like a bitch, right? You want to fucking hit the drums. Excuse my language, but, you know.
Don't worry about it. M17.
Right, yeah.
M17.
So, absolutely. You need to, I don't know, you need to really, you know, whereas with master, I'm like, it's more like old school, so I'm able to lay into that D beat, you know, even though it's seemingly fast. You know, this music gets so much faster, right? So once you cross a certain speed threshold, like, you have to rely on a totally different set of muscles. Whereas, like, you know, you see some dudes and they're, like, whipping their hands all over the place and doing karate and shit behind the drums. But then you watch, like, a dude, like, there's this guy, Dominator. Nils Fjeldstorm, I forget his name. He played through Dark Funeral and a bunch of shit. But the guy's blazing fast and he hits, like, hard as hell. And you watch him, and he's just, like locked into this position. Even when he does these fills, you know, he's only really moving his elbows. Like, his elbows stay by his side. He's only really, like, kind of moving his arms to facilitate the hit that's only coming from his hand, you know, coming from his fingers. And it's not even wrist, man. The only way I used to throw in some wrist action just to break up using my fingers so I don't tire out, you know, but you can really generate a lot of force. Like, the more it's, you know, it's like a 1-inch punch, you know, you focus that shit, you're able to, you know, and that goes into visualizing muscle groups for sure. Like, you know, your last video there, you really, or even with singing too, you have to visualize internally, because that's your instrument is your body, you know, to a large extent, especially with singing, but, you know, a lot with drumming, because it's, you know, it's your whole body you're using. So you're kind of visualizing these things and figuring out through some sort of abstract visualization how to push, you know, these motions down into the smallest portion of where it's coming from. So A, you don't tire out, and, like, you know, because I'm doing a blast beat like this, I'll be dead in 5 seconds. You know what I mean? But if I'm going like this, and I've worked to be able to retain the power, or at least push as much power into there as possible, then I can go on like that for a couple hours. You know what I mean? And like that dude, if you check his videos out, like, he just blasts and blasts and blasts, and he talks about it. Like, he, once he gets locked into it, he's just like on fire. You know what I mean? So.
What? Well, that's interesting that you brought that up, because I know you are also a vocalist and you have a very, very wide range. Most guys are Cookie Monster and pretty much it, but I know that you have a very wide range of vocal. It's since we're talking about, I guess it would be, is it larynx control or something like that? Just to give people an idea, because people think you just go out and, you know,
pull a rabbit out of a hat.
Yeah, pull a rabbit out of a hat, or you buy a pedal and hit the button and now you're right. The Cookie Monster. But yeah. Or, you know, versus the I know you've been doing higher notes and registers, I'm sorry. And yeah. Just give an idea, because this is, once again, these are things that you can control in your body that people think, oh, he's a great singer. He was naturally that way.
Yeah.
Well, nine times out of ten, that's not quite the case.
It's never the case. That's the hugest misconception about any music. Like, even, you know, like just your cover band that you're gonna see down the street. People, they come, you know, and they see it, and they say, like, they watch this dude pull a rabbit out of a hat. I always like to use this analogy, but they don't see how many hours in fucking years that dude spent trying to stuff that fucking rabbit into the hat. And, like, you know, that rabbit wants to jump all the time. So if you don't keep it in the hat, you know. But it definitely goes into a lot of, I mean, you got to practice. It's nonstop. I think I'm missing the point of this question here.
Vocal range. How would you work to in your mind, if you're singing a song, let's say, I don't know, something that's going to change registers and everything. And I know they always tell you you're singing from here or below the camera. You're singing from your diaphragm or you're singing from here. And you'll see some people actually change the shape of their mouth when they're singing, or they hold their jaw a certain way because they know it's an instrument and they have to do that. Do you work along those lines or?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I used a program. It was called the Zen Art of Screaming because they had like a really awesome vocal warm up on there. And it just consists of all these like odd noises and embarrassing shit that you want to go out into the tour bus or van to do by yourself. You know, but basically a lot of the training for it it consisted of tons of visualization. There would be like, you know, things like, okay, imagine a football in the back of your throat, and you're like, what? But you really have to, because it is all internal, you have to visualize what it looks like in order to be able to create these different shapes with your body. You know what I mean? It's not like I can just look at my hand and go, oh, I'm hitting this note. You know, it's like, you're like, okay, I have to hit this note and I have to like position myself this way. And then aside from that, you know, it's a whole series of stretching the voice out and like, you know, finding your medium or your median, whatever your natural range is, and then trying to push that both ways. I think, you know, I mean, at one point I had my voice up to 5 octaves and I was able to do that while playing drums and screaming and growling and all this shit at the same time, which was, I mean, I'm not there now, you know, but I would definitely have to have a place where I could go and be loud as hell for an extended period of time, to, you know, and not be embarrassed about my fucking neighbors hearing me. What the hell is he going? And make all these stupid noises, you know? But yeah, it's a lot of visualization.
Because it's really, you know, something like that. We try to have something for everybody here, but that's been the biggest thing with the, you know, now that there's a billion, voice shows and this and that and the other thing, and everybody just says, I'll drop the bomb and I'll scream, as you know, and they just are warbling screaming as their vocals. Sure. That's why they can't make it on the next week's show, because they've blown out their voice box or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And which you can do.
It's good to know, like I said, you gotta walk before you run, because everybody thinks they're Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
Now on the first note, and you know, that was always a thing. If you had that, some people had to do that rangy thing. The instructors at college used to say, "Well, that means you can't hold a note."
Yeah.
I tell you to hit a high whatever, you hit that note and you hold it till we tell you not to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Like Pavarotti, was that Messolini Doma?
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is the last beat, is the last note, whatever that is, in whatever key.
Mm-hmm.
And then he holds it for till he almost has coronary. The fact is the sustain of the voice more so than, because nobody knows what the hell song is about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that was the unfortunate thing with opera, was it got classified as like either highbrow or unattainable.
Yeah.
An average person didn't sing like that unless you were like Ian Gillan, you know, or
John Anderson.
Yeah, John Anderson. Not, I mean, Dio sort of blew it for everybody who was being, because he just would, you know, you know, he was
the growl on it.
Loud, high, and raspy.
I love Dio.
But so I mean, much. I'm not saying anything bad about him.
Yeah.
I just that went counter to these other guys that were classically, possibly classically taught or classically influenced. And they need that voice. And then people, of course, got ignorant and said, well, I'm doing gospel. I don't need to learn classical. Well, if you learn classical, you have your breath control,
mm-hmm.
which we need for sports in general. And you wouldn't be tired out halfway through the Bodyguard song.
Yeah. I mean, that's true, the Bodyguard song.
That's destroyed more evenings at the karaoke bar than cheating spouses.
You know who wrote that song?
Dolly Parton.
Fuck yeah, there you go. And
I, my cousin lives in South Carolina. I had to hear all that stuff from she had when Dolly World, well, the real Dolly World, and then there was like Dolly World East or something.
Right.
Freaking crazy thing going on. They used to have all those. Brooks and Dunn had a
oh god,
whoever those guys are, they had a thing in Myrtle Beach too, which is now a super church. Figure that out. Every big somebody and somebody country group that opened these theaters so they wouldn't have to play places, they all failed, and now they're owned by super churches.
Of course.
Why not, right? I mean, they're giant metal pole barns anyway. They're nothing exciting on the inside.
Exactly.
They do what they have to do. So that's you go from that to that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was I'll get aside real quick, and then you can give me the time out that there's too much time on that. I think I told you that when you talk about karaoke, I was in Myrtle Beach when my cousin had a place called the Sports. It's now closed. The owner was moved out of the area. And they had karaoke, and in certain cities, it's a huge thing. And these couple came in, and they're singing this song. And I'm like, wow, they sound really, you know, they're really, really good. And I said to the owner, I'm like, you know, boy, they're really like into that. I didn't know the song, but they really knew all the breaks, and you know, it's a real old country western song. And the guy's like, "Well, they should be. They're the ones that sang it, the background music for it on the real record."
Oh my God.
The one all those country theaters opened. Everybody went there. You know, like on the country rodeo circuit, I guess. And then when the place closed, a lot of them didn't have the money to move to Branson, or they were going to. The karaoke mafia would put them in a car and drive them to like 10, 15 different bars in the night.
Oh my God.
And they would come sing the backup for Crazy, or, you know, something. They would do that. They would do the song because they were the original people doing it. I was wow. And they told me after I left, because I would have had them sign something just because, you know, they're like the foot soldiers of the music industry. Nobody knows who these poor guys are. And, you know,
that's crazy.
That era, that would be like the wall of sound, you know?
Yeah.
Who are all those people, and what are they doing with themselves?
Right. Well, it's like Nashville. They got some poor old guy, you know, 70-year-old man just locked up in a basement, and they, like, make him write riffs, and that becomes the new pop country hit or whatever, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like Mad Libs, I think. Country music is now pretty much Mad Libs. It's songs that Don Henley refused to record, and it goes out from there.
Right.
I would have opened with that, but I knew that his estate would have, or Glenn Frey's estate would have sued us, because I would have told them we were programmed to receive. Oh, but anyway. So that would have been a horrible thing. But we have a couple questions, and then we'll go back to your story of musical awareness.
Yeah.
First question is all from the internet.
Cool.
Where were you when you first heard Bethany playing? I think I got the name right.
Bethany. I've used that joke so many times, Frank, since you said it. For the record, Frank is talking about the band Bathory. And, you know, you see all these people wearing Bethany shirts, and, you know, you go up, who's Bethany? And they're, like, so appalled. Meanwhile, you know, that's the only one of that, or Burzum is the other black metal band they could tell you, and they don't realize how, you know, racist the shit is, you know, in Burzum, but whatever. I don't know. I never really got into Bathory. It wasn't my thing.
Well, yeah, you have too much skin pigment, probably. You haven't been feasting on blood.
Well, you know, we actually, so when I was in Brutality and I recorded an album with them in 2015, Sea of Ignorance, we did a Bathory cover, and I was just like, man, we're going to do a cover? And that's, like, probably my favorite song on the album. Like, it's actually really good. Pretty cool, you know?
That's a sincerest form of flattery, because Masters had a couple covers, right?
Yeah, a bunch of people covered us. Mayhem actually covered, well, it's technically a Death Strike song, but whatever, it's the same band. Mayhem covered us on their new album. They did The Truth, which was awesome. I got to talk to Yearn Necro Butcher, and he was saying that he used to play that song with Euronymous. That was, like, you know, one of their, they used to jam on that song all the time back in the day. And I'm like, oh,
well, that awesome. would be a good team up. Did they ever think about taking you guys out on the road with them? Or
I would love that. And I told him, hey man, if we ever play, you got to come out and play the song with us, you know, and Paul will sing. I would love that. I toured with them in 2011 with another band that I was in, and those guys were awesome. They were a blast. They're super professional. It was a lot of fun.
Well, let's hope somebody that knows them sees this and makes the phone call to Dr. Speckman's office.
Right.
For real. Can figure out that language. Maybe get you guys out there on stage together. That would really be something.
Well, they're supposed to be on tour in the U.S. right now, but obviously that ain't happening. So
yeah,
I literally have a pile of stuff I was supposed to give him from Paul sitting on my shelf still.
Well, that's what I would throw out there for people that understand. You guys have to a pretty, and I'll mention this, and then and then it'll be a question after that. You have a pretty brutal tour schedule. When if this year had gone the way it should have, because I saw the lists. You were playing how many dates and how much time on the European tour?
I don't even know. We literally had European festival dates from the beginning of April up until, till the, you know, end of June. But we actually would have been in the studio right now. I think we would have been just getting out of the studio at this point. So we had, you know, a ton of all over Europe. We actually were supposed to play Maryland Death Fest. So we would have flown in the U.S. for that one show, flown back over, and basically it wasn't super crazy because it was all festival dates, so it was like every weekend. Yeah. We were giving ourselves time to like work on the new album. We would have been, you know, doing all that up until June, yada yada. Then after, toward the end of June, we were set to go on like an actual tour all over, you know, different parts of Asia. We were going to be in Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, Thailand, like all over the place, and then go to Australia. So basically, we would have been out on this tour cycle, whatever you want to call it, from April to like mid-July, you know, like just gone. And but otherwise, like typically, I mean, I've done with Master, probably the longest run was like 32 shows in 32 days, which I love that. I love playing every day, man. It's the best.
Was that the West Coast going into Mexico or?
No, that was back in 2013. We did play in like Baja, whatever, which I guess is technically Mexico, but not really. It's like California. So, but it was just like a full US. Then we did a bunch of Mexico dates for, I forget how long it was, in this past year, 2019. That was awesome. I had such a blast in Mexico. I got to see a lot of really amazing places. We went to the pyramids and Teotihuacan, all over the place. It's really cool.
You have a lot of real rabid fans from down there. And I think if I had been able to advertise it a little more, you would have had a lot more questions on Instagram coming from them. Because I think I had one or two guys that just gave it a thumbs up. But
our highest engagement on Instagram.
They're from your Mexico fan base.
Yeah.
Which is just great to see like how much interest there is in the music down there.
they love it, man. They're all about it. They live it. Some of the most genuinely interested fans. And like, you know, you go to any place that, you know, I'm trying to think how to word this, people perceive as like, you know, oh, it's crazy or whatever, you know, where people don't necessarily have access to, like, you know, all this money. Like, you know, you go to Europe and a lot of people are jaded, but it's still like, they still are super rabid fans. But like, you know, places like Mexico and some of the, like, you know, more kind of hoodie areas and stuff, people are just like, they just want to give you everything. They want to show you their culture. They want to buy all your shit. Like, they just, every little thing. It's just awesome. You know what I mean? Like, they're rabidly, rabidly awesome fans, but they're not like, nobody attacked us. They weren't going crazy. Like, oh, but they, like, everybody wanted a fucking picture. Like, and we would just stand there for like an hour after we played, just taking pictures on the side of the stage of people. And they were just so stoked. And like, dude was like, couple dudes were like crying and shit. Like, they were like,
well, they're really loving it. I mean, they really, yeah. It seems that certain regions or whatever in all these countries, the music really, really speaks to them at a real gut level.
Yeah.
And then when they get to finally see a group like yours in there, and they just go totally freaking nuts.
Yeah. It was cool though, man. You know, nobody was ever like weird. They were always just like, because that's the thing with metal, you know, I feel like real metal, at least, whatever, you know,
yeah.
There was, especially when I was a kid, like if I wanted to go and hang out with a metal band that I like idolized, all I would do is be like, hey, you know, you guys want to have a drink? you know, or whatever. And they would always be at the merch table, you know. And a lot of those bands don't do that anymore. They're not at the merch table anymore. But that's the thing with Paul. That motherfucker's sitting out there selling the merch himself all the time. And, like, you know, people have tried to get us to do, like, meet and greets. And he's like, fuck that. I'm not doing a meet and greet. You can meet me at the merch table. Like, you know, I'm not giving the venue money or whatever. Or the, you know, the tour manager, whatever you want. Not tour manager. Booking agent or whatever. I'm not going to charge these people, you know, out the ass to come and meet and greet me and fake shake my hand for half a second when they can just come and talk to me at the merch table. You know what I mean? And like, you know, and they're obviously they'll probably buy something too while they're there, but like, you know, he's still at the table. You know, I've seen him get completely naked at the merch table and change because he had nowhere else to go. Like, or just pull his pants down. He's like, I don't care about it. You know what I mean?
He's got to get changed somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, he'd be soaking wet after the show.
In his party pants.
Exactly.
Oh my god, dude. I could see that. I could see that because I was able to be at the merch table with him before.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen it. Famous cheese quesadilla, which was cheese singular. Yeah. I don't think there were many cheeses in that thing.
No, it wasn't bad though. The chips, you know, I remember eating all those chips up. They were tasty.
Well, that's going to be something I guess people have to look forward to. You've been kicking around the idea of doing like a tour / foods cultural video.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
This tour, you would have kicked off on it more than the Mexico Central American one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. You know, I have like a little camera that's good for recording live like shows because you can set the gain and yada yada. It's wide angle, and I wanted to use that to go around. And I still have tons of footage from stuff like the last time I was in Asia with Hellwitch and, you know, of all this stuff. And it's weird to try and film yourself, excuse me, you know, when you're doing this, because I'm like, here I am eating this amazing like barbacoa that we just pulled out of the fucking pit, you know what I mean, that this guy, like, you know, wrapped up in whatever giant agave leaves. And it's difficult to film it yourself while you're doing it, you know what I mean? We kind of really need somebody else there filming so we can, like, you know, have banter and like antics. And the whole idea for me was to literally showcase the life of, like, you know, touring in a metal band and in all these crazy places. And because all I do is, you know, we'll go somewhere and then we fucking go eat. We just, like, you gotta eat whatever the food is here, like, you know what I mean? Like, I eat a fucking scorpion, like, whatever. Like, we're eating all kinds of weird shit all the time and then we play shows. So it's
And it's something, I guess, that, you know, the fans or anybody else would really enjoy, because, you know, not that you don't deserve it, but you're not staying at the Four Seasons. It's not the Bon Jovi tour.
No, you know, not at all.
It's not where, you know, not even sure what town I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, they dump me out of one car into another car and I'm wherever. I mean, I looked at a lot of the photographs of you at all. Mm. And you're right in it. You know,
yeah.
Like, you're not getting any closer to being a local than, you know, what you were doing.
It's and, true, man.
You know, you're like, oh, but they wouldn't. It's like, until they realize that the metal fans in wherever are also wearing all black stuff. And
yeah, exactly.
And T-shirts from whatever group they like. And they're not running around in sombreros and whatever crazy shit that they're going to tell you is going on.
Yeah, like some montage of, you know, like Hard Day's Night or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, they're just metal fans from a different country.
Yeah.
Which is, that's really the great thing about what you guys have going, because it allows for a little continuity there as far as you have that in common. And what else do you really need? You know, you have music in common, love of the music, and you go from there. So now that we've talked a little bit about that, to go back to where we should have started with it was, you're going on the tour. How are you getting, you're really working out your routine in advance before you get there, right? Because once you're out there, you're in the little van and whoever's gassy is gassy. And
it's me.
You have that going on. Yeah. And
although I got to say, man, Pat, boy, his ass was legendary. In Europe, it was, oh my God, the whole tour bus, people were like, what is that? It was so, and he just, anyway.
He's flying in an egg? Is that what it was?
I think it was just all the special beer we were getting over there, you know? And he was just, man, it was the funniest thing, because he'd hear him go, and I'm like, oh, you motherfucker, I know you shit himself. Like, you know what I mean?
That's what he needs next time, a little deuce in the shorts and he'll straighten right out.
It was legendary. It really was.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You got, you know, you're in the little bus, you're in the hotel, you're on this or that, all that. Did you find you lost or gained weight?
I always lose weight on tour, even if I'm eating, like, you know, fucking 45 tacos a day or whatever, you know, wherever we are. Like, I always lose weight because, I mean, I'm like, doing consistent running, you know, in place for however long a day, and I do my stretching and I'll warm up, and, you know, like I said, even if I'm eating like a maniac, yeah, I still wind up losing weight.
And I noticed, I don't know if every group is like yours, you guys actually go out and do things.
Oh yeah.
It's not like you're sitting in a beer bottle somewhere and they just dump you out and let you go to town again. You're out, I wouldn't say doing tourist move number one, but you're out there seeing as much as you can see. And
absolutely. And I definitely, like, we were in Mexico City. I was like, yo, we got to go to the Sonora market, which is like the notorious witch market, which is crazy. That was totally nuts. I was like, man, I'm glad I bought a couple cool things there. But it's like literally the whole outside of it is covered with like kids' toys and stuff. And then you get a little further in and you start seeing like all these Santa Muerte statues and all kinds of shit. And then you get further in and there's like animals for sacrifice and God knows what else. It's pretty crazy. And then you get further in and there's even some weirder shit, but whatever, you know. And everybody's looking at us like, what the fuck are you doing here? You know, but it's pretty cool.
You just got to show them the shirt, whatever you guys got going on that day.
Pretty much, yeah, exactly.
You know. Or the vest. Well, you know,
the vest.
You have a stage vest, unlike the South Florida death metal guys that have a party vest.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. Well, we got our little, like, master jacket, you know, our little master, I don't want to say cut, but yeah, it's like our little master thing that we, you know, we all have our little special pin on there and stuff.
So everybody knows how metal everybody is. That's all that matters.
Yeah. I used to go out of my way to not look metal when I played metal shows, just to, like, fucking freak people out. Like, what?
Well, I think Paul's
wearing a button-down shirt.
I think Paul's just Paul at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
He's getting like Junior Lemmy status where it's just like,
yeah,
Paul's kind of, I mean, Paul. You don't expect, he's not dressing up. This is it.
Yeah. This is what you see is what you get, brother. You know, I mean, they call him the Lemmy of death metal, you know,
I don't expect to see him in a Volkswagen commercial anytime soon.
Exactly.
You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But It's been something. Well, the clock on the wall says 3 o'clock. And I think we've got a lot out there for people to chew on. I'd like to have it where we have you come back when you have your travel things together.
Mm-hmm.
Although there was, of course, the big question we didn't get to, which was Gene Krupa or Buddy Rich.
You know, I have a CD somewhere where it's both of them, and it's fucking awesome. They do, it's like a Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich drum battle. You know,
they're playing a child's drum set. That's all you have to remember. They're playing
for real.
The equivalent of what would be a child's drum set today, like a novelty one, like the little Kitty one or whatever, Hello Kitty drum set.
Yep, and just destroying it the whole time. You know, just going crazy on it. I don't know. I really like. You know, Buddy Rich's nasty, shitty attitude. Like, it's funny. Like,
oh, you listen to those.
Oh, it's ridiculous. You listen to, like, the old videos of him just, like, fucking going off on his band, like, screaming and hollering at him. I mean, it's comedy. It's pretty funny.
That would,
as far as playing, I don't know, you know.
That's why I thought that movie would have brought back some interest in all that. I can't remember the name of the movie anymore.
Oh, I didn't see it. I know what you're talking about. He's like, not quite my speed.
The kid's the jazz drummer.
Yeah. I forgot.
Whatever that was. Yeah, obviously, it didn't bring it back enough for any of us to remember.
Right? I didn't even see it, so whatever. I don't know.
I did see it, which was worse, because it's like, oh, my God. Knowing what I knew about the jazz program at our college, this guy would have been thrown out like 10 seconds. The instructor would have been thrown out like 10 seconds into his first thing.
Yeah, so you realize we're paying you, right?
Yeah, those days are over.
Yeah,
but true. that's the thing. So, do you have anything other than your new album, which you're working on? What else do you have?
Oh God, I've been working on that for fucking years.
Well, I put out the song that was on the full song. We put that out there as a prequel.
Yep.
To, whatever you have going on.
Yeah, well, that I'm hoping I just got to be able to record it. I actually been, so that's the other thing I've been doing is playing a ton of guitar and writing a bunch of stuff. So, you know, I have more than enough for an album. I just got to get in there and record it somewhere. But that, you know,
well, COVID, that's
pretty much all I've been doing. Yeah, the COVID album, exactly.
Yeah,
that's all I've been doing, you know. And now with all this stuff, like, you know, kind of everything kind of got sidetracked. Typically, I was, you know, a sound engineer at a place over here, and that's just, you know, like, couldn't pay me jack shit, so I'm just kind of like trying to figure everything out, you know.
I keep telling people on here the South Florida pay scale is right up there with Nicaragua's pay scale.
Yeah, it's atrocious,
and the employment practices are pretty much the same.
Yep,
pretty much the same. If you're for expecting sure. to, you know, getting it in writing doesn't even matter.
No, you got to have your own business down here for sure. I feel like the people that do the best, you know, they're just hustling all the time.
It's something. Well, we got to hope for a trio, you, Nico McBrain, and Max Weinberg drum off.
Oh, God.
Tell your fans.
I totally fit into that.
Any of your fans watching this to start agitating for that.
Yeah.
Because that would be funny. The only thing I remember with McBrain was years ago when I was living in Lauderdale by the Sea, which is down further. He did a show, and it advertised him. It didn't say what he was playing, so everybody went thinking it was going to be Iron Maiden. And he starts his blues, jazz blues odyssey or whatever.
Got him.
You know, they'll probably say it didn't happen, but I heard it was like riotous.
That's funny.
Like,
what,
you know,
the hell? Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever. Any of those other bands that get self-important.
Well, I think he plays in an Iron Maiden cover band, too.
That's wow.
Ridiculous, yeah. He plays in a cover band of his own band, you know?
Maybe that's back when they all got along or something.
Yeah, well, he just wants to fucking play the drums, man. I don't blame him. He's like, well, what can I do? All right, I guess this, you know, wants to hear it.
I'm sure he has a gazillion dollars at this point, even though.
Well, I mean, who knows? I know he's got, I still haven't been down there, but he's got Rock and Roll Ribs. In
Coral Gables?
Yeah, maybe. Or Coral, I don't know, whatever the closer one to us is here.
Yeah.
Springs or Gables, I'm not sure.
Did you think in Coral Ridge Mall, probably, or something?
Yeah, I drove past it once. I don't remember. I still haven't gone in there, but apparently the fucking ribs are really good. It's like, man, that brick.
He's had a lot of time to perfect them.
Yeah, exactly.
He's writing that off when he's doing his next project.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's been the shame. It's just a shame that there's not the live venues here are not. There was a decent one near you, but it sort of seems to have turned into garbage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people like
from Nashville, we don't have to mention who they are. It's really turned into being a POS operation.
I mean, you know, it runs itself, it seems like. I mean, it's just that, you know, people come in to hear music. They don't even care what it is. You know, they just want to hear live music. I mean, that's not to say people are going to come and listen to death metal, but
you know. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, just in general, the music. And same thing for that genre. I guess Churchill's is probably, you have to go all the way to Miami.
Yeah, exactly.
And then take your chances parking around Churchill's.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
So that's your dedication. Anybody listening, if you think you're a dedicated metal performer, bring your new car to a show at Churchill's and leave it parked somewhere in that neighborhood and see how
it goes. Well, they got like a whole parking thing going on there, and there's dudes out there like watching your cars and shit. So that's kind of cool, you know.
Yeah, last time.
But they charge you, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's that or let them break into your car.
Yeah.
It was like they used to do to us in Brazil. We would go to a restaurant, yeah. And I said, "Does he work here?" And the guy's like, "No, he's just like, if you don't give him a couple dollars, they're gonna beat your car up when you go inside." And, thank God I don't have a car. That's why I never rent a car in any country I don't even rent one here.
Yeah.
But I never rent a car in other countries, regardless of what people are telling you. Oh, see the scenic. No.
Yeah, no. Take a bus.
they see a tourist behind the wheel. Guys are jumping on your hood. Even here, you know that. Even here, they'll be jumping on the hood.
Everybody goes crazy.
Yeah, the whole family's got shock trauma issues.
So, yeah.
Well, that's good. So thank you again.
Thank you.
You guys can find Rustin on Instagram as
Rustin Gross. It's just RustonGrosse. I also have my food travel thing, which is Eat the World Food Travel. You got a bunch of pictures and little highlight videos of, you know, me being a fat ass all over the world.
Cool. Well, I'll try to get the information and put that in at least the YouTube link, because the other ones don't offer that. And of course, you can hear Rustin with Master and Deathstrike.
Yep.
They get back in action, which hopefully will be in a few months. Maybe.
Well, we got the next thing we have coming up is in April, and next April, which is all over Spain. So we're going to be doing, I think, 10 days in Spain, just all over the place. 10 in a row, bing, bang, boom, get in, get out. So that'll be fun. I love when we got to spend some time in the Basque country the last time we were over there, and it was pretty cool.
I'm gonna try to.
This is not Spain, but whatever.
I'll save my nickels if I can, because I've been wanting to go to Spain.
Yeah.
And although I don't want to have to deal with Pat's ass, maybe I'll ride on the roof.
Exactly.
Drum set.
That's what I'm talking about.
But yeah, I've been wanting to get over there because I want to go to the Prado and all those places.
Yeah, well, I know, and we're going to be in Granada and all this shit. I'm like, man, we're going to see all the old, like, you know, the old Moorish stuff and all the crazy shit they have over there. Beautiful.
I'll see if we can make it. I'll put an advertisement out when it gets closer to the date. Hopefully by then we'll know where you're going to be. If people want to go over, you know.
Yeah, well, those tour dates are out now.
You may get lucky and the price of flights may be cheap still.
Yeah, who knows? Well, luckily we don't have to pay for that anyway, but still, you know, it would be better for everybody.
For anybody who's interested in, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Check out Master and Deathstrike. Their music is online. They have their own page, websites, which you can also order merchandise from.
This is true.
And, you know, great group. And Rustin's Amaze of Spentus, obviously, is... There's some online. You can also buy things through Bandcamp, I think.
Yep. Well, and even through just me directly. If you message me directly, I got all kinds of merch and shit. But we also, Master has a website, which is specmetal.net, like Paul Speckman. What else? You know, we got our Instagram, which is Master Band Official. We got Deathstrike, official is our Death Strike, you know, IG. So yeah, we're all over the place. I can't fucking remember all this shit, dude. Oh my
God. It's an empire.
It is.
The metal empire.
Yep.
So, okay. Well, thank you very much, Rustin. And anybody
thank you for having me on.
Anybody who has questions for Rustin can join his Patreon or fans only. See what he's wearing below his waist right now.
That's right. Look at my butthole for $5.
He's actually got a much better camera for that site. That's where he pretends to be a fitness model in Phuket, Thailand.
Yeah.
Jesus like everybody Christ. Else, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not a terrible. Single girl left in Russia, that's all I can tell you. Not a single one, not a good-looking one anyway. They're all living in Phuket, Thailand.
Oh, no. I'm just so sad.
I'm going to cut this feed, but hang on a minute, okay?
Well, thanks, Frank, for having me on, man. I appreciate it. Don't forget to check out Iron Age Sportswear. Frank owns this amazing company. I mean, I should have worn my damn shirt.
Don't worry about it. I have to make more anyway.
Yeah. It's high-performance athletic sportswear for the modern drummer.
There you go.
All right. Really, that's great.
That's it. Hold on.
Thanks, brother.